I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Special edition today is the Utah Jazz know who they're going to be facing in the first round of the NBA playoffs. That is the Denver Nuggets. As always, you can read me at kslsports.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Today, we're talking to TJ McBride. He covers the Denver Nuggets for Mile High Sports. You can find him on Twitter at TJ McBride NBA. TJ, the Jazz very clearly tanked some games, I think, to set up this matchup. Denver may have tried to do the same. What does this mean for Denver now that the Jazz have been targeting this series?
I don't think they think anything about what the Jazz think about it. The Nuggets want the exact same the Jazz wanted. They wanted to pull the Jazz, not the Mavericks, in the first round of the playoffs. Again, like you said, the Nuggets will never admit to that. But against the Lakers and against the Clippers, the Nuggets did not play a single starter in the fourth quarter other than Michael Porter Jr. last night. So they clearly were not looking to go all in on grabbing that two seed, because I wouldn't want to face Luka Doncic in a first round. Like, he might already be a top five player in basketball. So I think Denver also got the outcome they were looking for, which is going to make this series so exciting, because both teams know exactly what they're going to get from each other. Both teams had looked to match up with each other, and now we're just going to get a slugfest, in my opinion.
And it's funny, Denver has, you know, they did it against the Lakers too. They didn't play any of their starters, and it was the PJ Dozier Bull show that were going head to head with LeBron and Anthony Davis, and they almost won that game. And I kept thinking, maybe this Denver team is, you know, 10 players deep, it looks like right now.
And they are 10 players deep. And what's crazy is that this is without two starters as well. Gary Harris and Will Barton have not played a single minute in the seeding games. Gary Harris did not play in the scrimmages. Will Barton played like 18 minutes in the final one. So they have not had their full complement of guys. I mean, you're talking about a bench unit that had Michael Porter Jr. removed from it and Torrey Craig as their best defender. And now suddenly PJ Dozier and Bol Bol have just appeared as these incredibly impactful players, and you wouldn't expect it from them. Bol Bol is the most interesting part of this for me, because watching him against high-level teams create a mismatch nightmare and change the pace in such an extreme way has become potentially a very useful weapon in the playoffs. If the Nuggets bench unit struggles, why not throw Bol out there, run some zone, and then go pick and pop with him on the offensive end? You can throw so many different levels of play at different teams, being that the Nuggets have so much versatility, 1 through like 13 on their roster.
Yeah, the Bol Bol story is interesting because, A, he was great at Oregon. I mean, the few games that he did play, he was in talks to be the number one draft pick. So it's not like it's crazy that he can play basketball. But after the injury, after some of the off-the-court question marks about whether he actually liked basketball or not, the weird two-way contract that he ended up being forced to sign after going in the second round, there were all these kind of weird things that distracted us from who he actually was on the floor. And then Mike Malone and the Denver Nuggets, I think, have done a nice job being extremely patient with him, not asking too much of him. And then when he does get on the floor, letting him be himself. I mean, he's doing a lot of the same things he did at Oregon and did in high school, which is good. You can't ask him at this point how young he is and inexperienced he is to try and do a bunch of things he's never done before. You've got to let him use his strengths, and then you can start to mold him, I think.
I completely agree with that. And not to go a little like too far off topic, because this is a Jazz podcast, but the Nuggets overall, if you go all the way back to when they drafted Emmanuel Mudiay, who you know way too much about at this point, Emmanuel Mudiay, the Nuggets just gave him the keys to the car and they were like, drive it however you want, when he was a rookie. And from that moment forward, when that went horrifically wrong for them and he was not able to progress and actually regressed as a player, the Nuggets were no longer doing that. Michael Porter Jr. had to earn his way to a spot in the rotation. rotation, not just starting, but just to get regular minutes. And they've done the exact same thing with Bol Bol. You're going to have to be physically ready. You're going to have to understand our defensive schemes. You're going to have to get practice time with these guys. And once you're able to check off those boxes, you will have the tools to be able to know what to do. It might not always work well, but we have given you all of the ability to do what you need to do on a court, and now it's just up to them. There are no more excuses. So that polarization effect of seeing how it went with Emmanuel and then changing it for Michael Porter and for Bol Bol, I think it's paid off massive dividends for this Nuggets team.
And it's probably not always been popular for Mike Malone. I mean, I know people were killing him for not playing Michael Porter Jr. earlier, and now he's been, you know, outside of TJ Warren, and he's been in the league for 6 years. Michael Porter Jr. has been the breakout player in the bubble. So what has been the story in the bubble for Denver? What's the takeaway from the media, from the fan base, etc.?
Is that their ceiling in the playoffs is significantly higher with having Jeremy Grant as their new addition this season and with Michael Porter Jr. a part of the starting unit. They have completely changed the complexion of this team. There are so many ways they can create mismatches now, and the one thing they always struggled with was just size. When you start Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and Will Barton at 1, 2, and 3, you're just too small. Now with Gary Harris and Will Barton hurt, all of a sudden it's Jamal Murray, Torrey Craig who's 6'7", then you have Michael Porter Jr. at 6'11", then you have Paul Millsap at 6'8", and one of the best back-end defenders in basketball, alongside 7-footer Nikola Jokic. Suddenly, they have the horses to deal with these bigger teams like the Lakers, like the Clippers, and we've seen that play out already in real time. That's the biggest thing for me, is being able to have a top-flight defender in Jeremy Grant who can sit down in a stance and defend Paul George one-on-one if needed, and Michael Porter Jr. to warp the court on both ends and add an entirely different wrinkle that didn't exist before. I did not have this level of faith for the Nuggets' top-end ceiling going into the postseason that I currently have now. I am absolutely astounded by how effortlessly Michael Porter Jr. integrated himself into this unit. How hard is it for rookies who have barely played and have inconsistent minutes to take 4 months off of basketball after sitting out for 18 months to just, like, have the speed of the game understood? Like, that is absolutely bewildering to me, and to see that happening, it makes me so much more hopeful that the Nuggets do have something potentially special here, and maybe they could be the dark horse in the Western Conference.
And Denver's done a smart thing with drafting Michael Porter Jr. and drafting Bol Bol, of just saying, hey, these kids were phenoms in high school. Their college careers got derailed by injuries, but let's take a chance on them with some easy picks. You know, I mean, the 14th pick, is it 14 where they got Michael Porter Jr.?
Yes.
So, you know, that's a crapshoot. Sometimes you end up with Donovan Mitchell or Kawhi Leonard or Klay Thompson. Yeah, or you get Tyler Lydon. Right, and they're awful. So having this idea of saying, we know he has the talent, we got to make sure we can get past the injuries, but Denver already had enough talent to be competitive in the West. It was a really smart moves by the front office of Denver, and now it's paying off. It is funny for Jazz fans who probably haven't seen much of Denver other than the double overtime thriller last Saturday. They're huge. I mean, Denver's just absolutely massive. And right now, with the Jazz not having Bojan Bogdanović, Quinn Snyder talked about how much they were going to miss his size. And it just kind of seems like, well, he's not a rebounder. He's not really a great defensive player. But now he's not on the floor. And the Jazz are so small, basically throughout the game, outside of Rudy Gobert. And Gobert's length is so good that it erases a lot of the problems the Jazz have. But they're going to look minuscule against this Nuggets lineup.
Yeah, and to build off of that, Nikola Jokic has been willing to take more threes as the seeding games have gone along, and I have to think it's because he knows he's going to have to pull Rudy Gobert out of the paint. I think he's getting himself into that mode, and then to, you know, piggyback off of your point, if you can pull Rudy Gobert even slightly out of the paint, I have no idea how the Jazz match up without Bojan Bogdanović. Like, you're probably going to put Joe Ingles on Michael Porter Jr. just because you need someone who's 6'9". Like, you can't put Royce O'Neal or Donovan Mitchell or Mike Conley on him. They're just not big enough. So that leaves 6'4", 6'5", of Royce O'Neal defending Paul Millsap and Donovan Mitchell defending 6'7 Torrey Craig. Like, that is so much physicality that they're going to have to deal with on the defensive end, and then somehow make up the math game without having Bojan in the bubble with them on the other end after expending so much energy. So that is something that I think is going to be a massive narrative in this playoff series, is how are the Jazz going to deal with this? Because right now, Michael Porter Jr. is just shooting over anybody who's smaller than him. And Paul Millsap, we know, is one one of the craftiest players in basketball with seemingly an endless bag of tricks. And when you put a smaller guy on him in the post, it's going to be a mismatch. So I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how it's going to work, but I am so fascinated to see what they do, because I'm starting to think they might just throw the playbook out the window, go small, and try and run this Nuggets team and try and dictate their own pace. But I really don't know how they're going to match up with that size that you talked about.
Yeah, and they've tried some different lineups in the bubble, and Jarrell Brantley's a rookie on a two-way contract who moves his feet really well and has an NBA body. In fact, he has Paul Millsap's almost identical build. He's about 6'6", 6'7", 250 pounds. I mean, he looks like Millsap. That was what every Jazz fan was hoping when they drafted him, that he could turn into that player. Now, you know, Paul Millsap's a four-time All-Star and has made $150 million in his career. Jarrell Brantley's not going to do that, but he can move his feet, and he might be a guy that the Jazz just have to say, hey, you know what? We're going to keep Rudy in the paint, and we're going to put Jarrell Brantley out on Nikola Jokic if he's going to try and shoot threes, and then let Gobert try and take away anything else that anyone's getting as far as easy looks. But Quinn Snyder's going to have to – he's going to have to try a lot of different things, I think, in the first couple of games to make sure that the Jazz have a defensive scheme that can deal with that size. But there's not a perfect solution. It's just not an ideal spot for the Jazz to match up with Denver, and I think you're right. Their best – fight against the Nuggets is going to be spreading the floor, going small, and hitting a bunch of shots. And I think that's something the Jazz are going to try and do, which I think brings us to our next point, is Denver has had the worst defense in the bubble, 22 out of 22 teams. What is the concern level for the Nuggets on that? Is it a flip they can switch? Have they been better this year defensively? I mean, their defensive rating says they have been. Is it something they can fix before Monday or Tuesday when these teams tip off?
It's so hard to tell, because the defensive rating the past 2 years has been top 10 worthy, and they've like shown that they can be a good defensive team, but they'd play at that level like a third of the season. So I really don't know where the actual sustainability exists. And even when they are playing well, they're selling out on just, we're going to hedge out as hard as we can on ball handlers to keep everybody out of the paint, and we're going to scramble behind, and we're going to try and use our length to close out on shooters. So that's a feast or famine option, especially against a team like the Jazz, where you can put Mike Conley in the corner or Joe Ingles and just scorch a defense like that. That is really, really concerning to me. The other part of this, though, is that the Nuggets have shown some extremely high-level defensive flashes in the bubble, especially when they're playing this jumbo lineup, when they have Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr. at the two, Jeremy Grant at the three, Paul Millsap at the four, and Nikola Jokic at the five. When they do that, they have the versatility offensively to stay afloat, but they just have so much size and so much mobility with that size to where they're able to close out and, you know, clear those opportunities. So on one hand, I want to say the Nuggets have the ability to do it. On the other hand, I have absolutely no faith in that actually holding up. So schematically, it should work. I just don't know if the execution level will be there enough sustainably to really be able to depend on that defense as your calling card to win playoff games.
And the Jazz are going to do what they did in the first half in that Saturday game, which is they're just going to run the pick and roll to death with Rudy Gobert and see if Nikola Jokic can stop it. You know, I don't think he was playing his best defense, obviously, in that game, which was just kind of a mid-level game. It had importance, but it wasn't the most significant game Denver was going to play, and they weren't going to reveal all their cards, understanding that I think that was a potential matchup. Neither did the Jazz, but the Jazz at the end, I think, we're trying to win that game, and that's why Donovan Mitchell went crazy in the, you know, last minute of regulation and then in both overtimes. So there certainly was some desire to win that game. I still think both coaches were probably holding back a little bit, understanding that there was a very good chance that those teams were going to meet up in the first round.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And on top of that, Nikola Jokic played that first half like it was a scrimmage. Like, I don't think Nikola gave any care in the world about that first half. It wasn't until the fourth quarter and both overtimes that he just decided he was going to end worlds and just end the game by himself. So I do wonder, because Nikola Jokic is one of the very small number of players in basketball who does have a switch they can flip. Nikola Jokic can go from, I don't care, I've taken one shot in three quarters, to having 30, 10, and 7 by the time overtime finishes. So I do have faith that Nikola can do that whenever he wants. My thing is, if Nikola Jokic is going to be unpredictable, will the team follow that exact lead? And I don't know yet. Normally in the playoffs, from what we saw last year, the Nuggets were dialed in. Like, Nikola Jokic and Michael Malone had that team ready, and Jamal Murray is taking some serious steps forward as a leader throughout this season. So I have faith they'll be able to find something that works and make it sustainable, but it's going to be fascinating, because this Nuggets team has so many questions and even less answers, and a lot of those have to be answered in this postseason, because they have so many roster decisions decisions to make next year. So I don't know what's going to happen, man. Like, I've said, I don't know, 75 different ways in the past 4 months, but that's really where I'm at, is this Nuggets team has been so unpredictable, we need to see it, and that's what I'm waiting for.
Denver's playoff run last year was weird because they were almost eliminated by the Spurs in the first round, and they were significantly better than the Spurs. Was it 2-7 or was it 3-6 like this year?
I don't. What do you mean 2-7 or 3-6?
Was Denver the second seed last year?
Yes, Denver was the second seed last year. It was 2-7 and they avoided the Rockets.
Okay, and they almost lost. They went 7 games with San Antonio. Am I right that Derek White went off in that series?
So this is the thing about that series. Derek White had an incredible first 2 games because Jamal Murray was basically just getting blown by every single time on defense. Like, it was the most abysmal defensive performance that I can remember from Jamal Murray. And he was trying. It wasn't for lack of effort. He was just sitting there lost. So yes, Derek White went nuclear. Michael Malone made the decision then to put Gary Harris on him, and that changed everything. From the second they put Gary Harris on Derek White after game 2, it just took off. The Nuggets absolutely manhandled the Spurs team from that point going forward, but when they let Derek White go off, the Nuggets looked absolutely atrocious because the defense was collapsing behind them for Derek White, and obviously the Spurs are one of the most efficient three-point shooting teams every single year around, so even if they don't take a lot, they're going to fall, and that happened against Denver. So I do think that a lot of that had to do with the first 2 games, not necessarily that Denver really got played like a 7-game series, if that makes sense.
So I think, and you're, you know, Quinn Snyder's a smart coach. He's going to go back to that series, and he'll talk to Greg Popovich. He's his former mentor.
Yep.
And they'll go back and say what worked, what didn't work. And if the Nuggets don't have Gary Harris in this series and the Jazz feel like, well, Donovan Mitchell can get wherever he wants on the dribble and he's a very underrated ball handler and can get to the paint. Now, it hasn't always worked this year against Denver. He had the miserable 1-of-12 performance the night he got named to the All-Star game, probably his worst performance this year.
Yes.
But I think they will go back to that. And Donovan Mitchell has shown an ability to win a playoff series. He did it against the Oklahoma City Thunder as a rookie when he would have a 40-point game and had 20-point quarters and was just absolutely incredible. I think the Jazz will go back to last year in the first round with that Nuggets-Spurs series and say, can they replicate that? Is it at all similar? That's something the Jazz can do? Because if you're asking Donovan Mitchell to drive and kick, I mean, I think that's what the Jazz want to do, because as you mentioned, they can put Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, George Niang, Mike Conley, now even Jarrell Brantley if he plays out on the three-point line. And I think they'll be very happy to say, hey, that's our best shot. We're throwing haymakers, but we're trying to hit as many threes as we can in a game. And if they can hit 15 to 20, they feel confident they can win.
The difference now, though, is that the Nuggets have the size and the length to be able to make up for it, because they're not going to put Jamal Murray on Donovan Mitchell. It's going to be Torrey Craig, and that's the end of the conversation, in my opinion. So you're going to need Mike Conley setting ghost screens on Torrey Craig, trying to get the switch to get Murray back on Mitchell, and then run an additional pick and roll with Rudy Gobert and hope that you have enough time after that to make the kick out. So Michael Malone is going to do a lot to try and keep Jamal Murray on Mike Conley and not on Donovan Mitchell. I also have a strong suspicion that Michael Malone is going to try and blend Murray into the bench unit so he can just scorch Jordan Clarkson and Emmanuel Mudiay. So I think that is going to be what they try to look to do, because if they just put Jamal Murray on Donovan Mitchell, that could be a very, very long season. With that being said, though, Jamal Murray has taken some serious strides as a defender. He's not where he needs to be. I wouldn't even call him league average at this point, but he came back with like 20 pounds extra of muscle, and he was holding Kawhi Leonard off in the post last night against the Clippers. So I do wonder how much that added muscle that he put on throughout the hiatus is going to change things for him, because so far in these seeding games, it has absolutely changed things for him. Well, again, it's been 7 games, so who knows how sustainable that is, but I do think there is a reality in which Jamal Murray is just significantly better defensively in a one-on-one setting.
And as you mentioned, you know, Mike Malone's a smart player, and he's got a smart coach, and he's going to keep Torrey Craig on Donovan Mitchell. And those are the types of players that Donovan Mitchell struggles with. It's the strong guards who can move their feet with him that he can't turn the corner on, and then they can push him off of his spots. And he's always struggled with those guys, and I think that's going to continue to be an issue. Now, the Jazz strength is they do have the ability to run the pick and roll with Joe Ingles, or run the pick and roll with Jordan Clarkson, or run the pick and roll with Mike Conley. And they'll say, we'll find the weak spot and we'll just run it to death. And if you can't stop it, we're not going to stop running it. And Quinn Snyder has no hesitancy doing that. I don't think, though, the Jazz can win the series if Donovan Mitchell's not averaging over 20 points a game. They just simply don't have the scoring without a guy like Bojan Bogdanovic on the roster. So they are going to have to find a game plan to get Donovan Mitchell involved scoring, and you can't wait till the last minute and hope he turns it on like he did on that Saturday double overtime thriller.
100% agree, and they're gonna need A to A plus games from Mitchell and Gobert to win games. Like, they just don't have the margin for error, in my opinion, because it's gonna be so hard to overtake that. The one wrinkle that I think is gonna be interesting is Joe Ingles running pick and rolls with Michael Porter Jr. defending him, because you have to have Michael Porter Jr. then fighting through a Rudy Gobert screen to either defend on the perimeter or end up trailing Joe Ingles as he's creating for somebody else. So I think that could be something they look to go to, but I also think the Nuggets are going to be smart enough to pre-switch Paul Millsap and Michael Porter Jr. whenever they get the opportunity to do so. So it's going to be very interesting. This is going to be one of the few playoff series, in my opinion, that is going to come down a lot to coaching, because they do know each other so well. Normally, it's a player-driven league, as everybody knows, especially in the playoffs when it's a slowed-down game and you rely on your overall talent. But the Jazz and the Nuggets know each other too well just to go out there and play. They're going to have to find those alterations and make adjustments to be able to get the upper hand. And that is going to be so fascinating.
So what does a first round playoff series win look like for the Nuggets? If they play well, they beat the Jazz, what happened?
They beat the Jazz in five games because there just isn't a matchup that they can put out there for Michael Porter Jr. And if they do switch off, then they can have some other mismatches created. The Nuggets just always having a mismatch on the floor is going to make it extremely difficult. The thing that can also flip this is that Denver just misses their shots. They are not a consistent three-point shooting team. So I do think that Denver has a more likely chance of winning in five or six games just off pure matchups. But at the same time, if they don't hit those shots, which happens far too often, this game could become a slugfest, go to seven games, and then it's winner take all. So I think the Nuggets have the horses, and they have the talent, and they have the mismatches to win in five.
And I think the Jazz series, if they are able to win this, it looks like, I mean, it's what they did on Saturday. It's what Quinn Snyder's offense is designed to do. It's they get open looks and they knock them down. As much as it's boring to say it's a make or miss league, that's what the Jazz are relying on. They understand they have to be all firepower right now. They really don't have the horses defensively outside of Rudy Gobert to lock a team up and keep these scores under 100. They're just not going to do that this year. They're not really designed to do that. So they need to have three guys going off for 20 points in every game. They need Rudy Gobert to have dominant defensive performances, and they need to score 115 points and hope Denver scores 112. I really think that's what these series are going to look like. And if the Jazz win, it's going to be four close wins over a long series that was hard fought. I mean, I just think this is going to be a really fun series. I would be stunned if we see many blowouts, unless there's a game where the Jazz go 4 of 20 from the 3-point line to start, which they've done twice now in Orlando. And if that's the case, the Jazz are going to be in trouble.
100% agree. Their margin for error is too small not to be able to be, I would say, 8 points better from the 3-point line than Denver in games. They need that kind of a gap to really be able to make up the difference.
And they're going to take 45 threes in a game. You know, very easily they're going to try and get over 40 every game. They took 55, I think, against the Nuggets in that double overtime game. So,
well, Mitchell had 16, didn't he, in that game? Yeah,
they have a crazy ability to get shots up. And George Niang will have a game where he takes 8. And Jordan Clarkson will have a game where he takes 10. And Joe Ingles can take 11 in a game very easily. So that's the game plan. That's the design. If they go in, the Jazz can win. If they don't go in, I think you're right. The Nuggets can win this game relatively quickly. You can find TJ on Twitter at TJ McBride NBA. You can read him covering the Nuggets at Mile High Sports. TJ, let's do this again before the end of the series.
Always down to talk some hoops with you, man. It was a pleasure to be here.
That's it for the Jazz Notes podcast. As always, you can find us at KSLSports.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops, and we'll catch up with you again as this series progresses.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.